Welcome to An Examined Education, a podcast recorded at the Cambridge School, a Christian classical school in San Diego, California, where we examine an education worth pursuing. On today's episode, you'll hear a conversation between Jeff Yoder and Russ Kapuscinski, our assistant head of school. Russ has been involved in the school in one way or another from its very inception. Currently, he oversees the Bible department and teaches apologetics here. And today he's going to lay out for us what it does and does not mean to be a Christian school in our contemporary climate. This conversation is just the first of many around this complex and interesting topic, but Russ has a lot of great things to say, particularly challenging some of the assumptions that we might bring in as we approach Christian education. That's a great conversation. Without further ado, I pass it over to Jeff Yoder.
Hey, Russ. Thank you for being here today after a long day of work and coming here to record some stuff.
Well, it is great to be here, and I can't think of another way I'd like to spend this Wednesday night.
Come on. maybe a couple of better ways, but
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Awesome. Well, I'm excited to talk to you and get your perspective on a couple different things. But before we get into everything we're going to talk about, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, your education, and stuff you did before working here at Cambridge and what you've been doing since you got here.
Sure. So I became interested and aware of classical Christian education back in the mid-90s. I did not grow up in a Christian home, and so I came to Christ at the age of 20 and had an interest in teenagers at that time, just in terms of communicating the Christian faith to teenagers especially that did not have a relationship with Christ, which ultimately led me to seminary, which led to an introduction to classical Christian education in an education class in seminary. And so it was at that time when I was exposed to this classical Christian approach to education and really fell in love with it at that time during seminary. And it was at that time, as I was preparing for ministry, pastoral ministry, that I was kind of swept up into education as well. And so at that time, in the late 90s, I was ordained as a Presbyterian minister in the Presbyterian Church in America, while simultaneously beginning to teach up to two or three courses a year at a classical Christian school in Orlando called the Geneva School.
Okay.
And so I kind of caught the bug then,
right?
And just saw the profound impact that kind of education, the formative power that education had on students. And now, as I've gotten older, as the decades have rolled on, so to speak, I've been able to see a number of those students who have graduated, who've been shaped by it, and how they've leaned into their marriages and their churches and how they're leading into their vocation and the equipping that they received and the fruit of that. And so I have loved this type of education for a long time and seen its impact. And I've always kind of orbited around it in some way or another after I left Central Florida to plant a church here in the South Bay of San Diego. It wasn't long after Diane and I moved out with two little boys at the time that I was looking for an option for education, a school for them. And there was no classical Christian schools in the county. And so began networking, and that's how I got connected with Gene Kim and ultimately the Cambridge School. And to fast forward, I planted a church in the South Bay in Chula Vista and did that for 11 years prior to coming on the staff here at the Cambridge School in 2014, right? Summer 2014. And as I at that time, we were just starting the rhetoric school. Mm-hmm. The first fall that I was here, it was our first ninth grade class. And so I came in to help build out the rhetoric school in partnership with this great team that existed here and to use some of my gifts in that way to kind of lean into the community and with some pastoral gifts in terms of conflict resolution and some of those things that crop up, regardless whether you're
doing
school.
We're glad you're here for that and other things.
Yeah, that's right. And so I've worn a handful of hats since I've been here. Upper school principal, which has now been passed on to Dr. Melissa Gingrich, who's just doing a phenomenal job. She is truly a great upper school principal. Dean of students, assistant head of school. That's been the one that's kind of been stuck with me the whole time. And so that's what I'm doing now. I'm the assistant head of school. I've taught some classes here in the Bible department, systematic theology in ninth grade, apologetics. This is my second year teaching apologetics. And so I really enjoy that deeply.
That's great. So you spent some time, some considerable time, I think, over the last we've been talking about it for maybe 3 or 4 years, on how we're Christian. Something that the Cambridge School does really well, I think, is to think deeply about something, and everything we do has much intention. And so we didn't want to slap the Christian name on, meaning a couple different things. So you've been taking the deep dive into how we're Christian and have explored that quite a bit. As we get into this, maybe give us a brief overview of maybe some assumptions that are first made that you found, and why it's important to understand how we're Christian.
Yeah, and the assumptions question, it's an interesting one, because really the assumptions to what is a Christian school really depend on the person who is showing up on the scene. And I think that's why it's so important to kind of delineate what do we mean by being distinctly Christian, because I think a lot of people who are Christian educators, they've been shaped by their particular view of Christ and culture, how they understand the Christian faith. And so they come with whether they've made it really explicit in their life or not, they come with a pretty profound philosophy of what it means to be a Christian educator, and they probably can't articulate it that well. But their convictions are pretty strong about those things. And they know, like, when they move into something, that if it's not what they think that it should be, they kind of almost define it by, hey, I thought it was something else. And so I think a lot of the assumptions that are made really depend on some of the work that, as I've been looking into this, they really depend on a person's view of common grace, and how much common grace there is in the realm of education, or lack of common grace, and also the role of an institution like a school, a Christian school, in terms of its relationship to the transformation of culture. Like, should we be active in transforming culture, or should we be somewhat passive in transforming culture? And so what I have found is that where people land kind of in that schematic really shapes and molds how they think about Christian education. So what I would say is that a lot of Christian education, I believe, is done in response to culture. And I'd say a lot of it is kind of circle the wagons, protect our kids. And so it's almost like a Christ against culture approach.
Okay.
In Christian education. So I'm talking like broadly now.
Right.
I don't
right.
believe that that's who we are at the Cambridge School.
Right.
But because of that, it'll even impact the kind of cultural artifacts that you're willing to interplay with in your curriculum.
So interesting.
In terms of literature, it will define what you will read and what you will not read.
Okay.
Based on the content of the book and whether it is Christian enough or not.
Interesting.
And so that's one example. Another example could be, because of how people lean into this so differently, there are other Christian schools in our very city that their chapel time is spent listening to Donald Trump speeches.
Okay.
And so the connection there being that, you know, when you think about culture-wide, the religious right and everything, you're thinking that this is an aspect of an application of my faith. And so if it's a strong application of my faith and how I should live in the world, and I should be really engaged in the political scene, I've got to pick sides.
Yeah.
And so there, when you ask the question, like, what does it mean to be Christian? I mean, it is like it's Katie bar the door. It's opening, in some ways, maybe not quite Pandora's box.
Right.
But you're going to get just a slew of different definitions. Now, there'll be some main things that will define some of those camps.
Right.
But that is really why it's so important to discuss why we are distinctly Christian.
Right.
To be very clear on that, or as clear as we can, because what I found is I made a lot of assumptions without thinking through those issues in coming board in Cambridge. I just, you know, and when I was pressed a little bit to think about some of them, it was interesting that I had to begin to, okay, well, I believe this, but why do I believe it?
Mm-hmm.
And again, those underlying assumptions that maybe we hold to, but we haven't really made explicit or articulated.
How does the church play into this discussion as well? So we have the family and the school and the church. How does the Cambridge approach to how we're Christian view that relationship?
I think this is one place where we are markedly different in some ways, because interesting enough, it's our high view of ecclesiology, it's our high view of the church that basically says we're not the church,
right.
And I think sometimes those lines are blurred in Christian schools. And how I would, an example I could give is when a Christian school would actually serve the sacraments at like a chapel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so our view of the church would be that the church is the church and we are not.
Right.
And as a school, a Christian school, we want to strengthen families, we want to strengthen church, but we find ourselves, and this is what we communicate to parents, this is what we communicate to students, on those issues that where kids are wrestling or their parents or churches hold a different view, we defer back to families, to homes, and to churches.
Mm-hmm.
In our Bible curriculum, what we're trying to do historically and theologically is, like for example, under the systematic theology in ninth grade, we're trying to talk about the heads of theology, those main things that have been taught over the centuries in terms of theology proper, soteriology, Christology, all those things.
Okay.
And so what we're doing is we're presenting what things have been taught historically, historical doctrines, but we're not actually telling kids what view of eschatology they need to have. Whereas other Christian schools, quite frankly, a lot of them would pick a particular view of the millennium, so to speak, and that they would actually teach that almost like in a catechetical to catechize students in that. Whereas we're gonna just approach it very differently. And as we do that, we believe that one, honoring just the theological side in terms of that some of the things in the scriptures, it's like Augustine said, in essentials, unity. That's our statement of faith of the school. There are some things that are so clear that we'll teach dogmatically because they're those things that all Christians believe.
Right.
But then there's this realm of non-essentials, and Augustine said in non-essentials, liberty. And then he said in all things, charity. And so there's just a lot of room for non-essentials, and that's where we just bend everything back to the home and to the church.
Right. And I think that as a school that's not covenantal, we have a small percentage of students that are not believers, and we have students and families from all different denominations, and so that plays into it too.
Absolutely.
I think some schools are connected to a denomination, and so they would be free to teach some of that doctrine where we were able to present it and not be prescriptive but descriptive.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great distinction.
So if we could, how does then, you started with the ninth grade curriculum, but how does our Bible curriculum, say in our upper school, how does that support our approach to how we're Christian?
Yeah, in our upper school, beginning in seventh grade, and maybe just back up real quick, in our grammar school, I think what we're trying to do there is introduce our students to the story of Christianity, and to do that in such a way where we're dealing with it with the historical veracity of it, and it's woven into things, so they're understanding that this is not mythology. But right. This is like when we're talking about story here, we're talking about something that you root your identity in. This is your story if you're a believer, if you're a Christian. And so you lay the foundation of the content, the grammar of the Bible. Who are the people? Where are the places? When did they live? All those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And that's important to be literate, to have a knowledge of those things, to know your people, to know your family, so to speak, is really important. And as we get into upper school in seventh grade, we jump back into the Old Testament, mm-hmm. But we begin to frame it out not just as a story, but then what are the contents? What are the contours of that story? And one of the main frameworks that we use is covenants.
Okay.
And so we're getting into what is a biblical covenant and how does God relate to his people and how do they move from Genesis to Revelation and how do they define our relationship with God? And so we're beginning to deal with some issues along those lines that are getting into more of the theology that the Bible teaches beyond the stories, mm-hmm. And especially in the Old Testament in seventh grade. And in eighth grade, we move into the New Testament. We begin to give tools to develop skills, to do inductive Bible studies, to begin to mine things out of the scriptures themselves while continuing to lay some groundwork in terms of some New Testament theology, mm-hmm. seeing how those covenants come to fruition in the consummation, the covenant of Christ. And so, we're still building on that grammar from the lower schools, but we're beginning to get to complicate it a little bit in seventh and eighth grade, mm-hmm. Giving it some theological frameworks and giving some skills and tools as they enter rhetoric school to be able to play with the doctrines and the curriculum, mm-hmm. that they'll be engaging. So systematic theology is a deep dive just in terms of these main heads of theology. Mm-hmm. They're historical, but they're also very theological. What does the Bible teach thematically about who God is, who man is, what is how a person is saved, soteriology, all those kinds of things. And so we're trying to do is we're trying to give them a real framework of understanding the themes and the content of the Bible, of all of this grammar that they've built upon. 10th grade, what we're doing is, what are those main creeds throughout church history? How is the church, if you look at it historically, what are those things that have risen to the surface that have kind of made this, as I mentioned earlier, the statement of faith that is kind of in the essentials unity.
Right.
And how has the church functioned throughout history and what is the church's call and how has that played out at different times in history? And so you're seeing it lived out in the people of God historically up to our present day in terms of like the many denominations and kind of where mm-hmm. we find ourselves in this historical moment redemptively. The junior year, we enter into apologetics. Apologetics is where you're learning how to defend the faith. We don't do it, you know, we teach apologetics both, it's not so much as you made the distinction between prescriptive and descriptive. Mm-hmm. Christian apologetics is a defense of the faith. And so one of the things that we talk about during apologetics is we just try to understand the world that we live in.
Right.
The different stories or narratives that come against the Christian story, and how has Christianity defended itself again historically, theologically? We look at it from both a cultural standpoint and cultural apologetics, but also philosophical apologetics. And then in the senior year, it's the application of the scripture and ethics and aesthetics. And so it's just it starts with a broader kind of like this broader view of ethics in terms of having some categories that I think are helpful as you get down to biblical ethics in the study of the Ten Commandments and then going into beauty and aesthetics and mm-hmm. And applied theology.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's like a seminary.
It's awesome.
Education.
Yeah, I wish I would have had it.
I know.
I still wish I could. I wish I could go back and do it again.
That's great. Something that you talked about in the last episode of your speech that you gave was talking about about vocational excellence, about what we want our students to really flourish in their calling. I wanted you to talk a little bit about, I think maybe in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, there was such a emphasis on, and this will be a little bit of my own opinion, such an emphasis on leadership, leader, leader, leader. Everyone's a leader. Everyone's got to be the change agent mm-hmm. out there. And it felt like that Wilberforce, like everybody's got to be the Wilberforce.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about that and a little bit about Milner and just retell that story a little bit for the listeners that maybe didn't hear your speech?
Yeah, I absolutely love the Isaac Milner story. And most people, like myself, had never heard of Isaac Milner. I had heard of William Wilberforce. I had seen the movie Amazing Grace. I'd read a couple of his biographies and just was – and I'm sure Milner was in there somewhere, but I just glossed right over it.
Right.
What I like to communicate to our students and what I like to remind myself, God is the one who changes the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he just calls us to live faithfully in it and to be excellent for him and to just pursue our calling. What I love about the Milner story is Isaac Milner was the brother of one of William Wilberforce's headmasters at his private school that he went to.
Hmm.
And Milner was a chemist and a mathematician. He was an excellent chemist and mathematician. He was a brilliant man. So brilliant, he caught the attention of Wilberforce, and Wilberforce loved his company. The story goes is that one summer, as William Wilberforce's mother and sister asked them to vacation, and he actually asked a friend, and I can't remember the friend's name, who was an Irishman, and he couldn't go with them, so he actually then asked Milner to join him. And I can imagine, you know, if your mom, and nothing against your mom or your sister, but if they're asking you to vacation, you may want to take a buddy along with you.
Right.
And so that's what happened. Milner just went with them. They went to the French Riviera. They traveled all around Western Europe, and he was just an enjoyable man to be with. So he was this man who loved Christ. He was an amazing mathematician and chemist. Mm-hmm. He just was pouring himself into those things he loved about God's world. He enjoyed just the company of people. He enjoyed, you know, to have a great meal, to feast, and just to laugh and enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of living his life, he also just touched people within his reach, just very naturally, winsomely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did with Wilberforce that summer. Milner was reading through Philip Doddridge's The Rise of Religion in the Soul of Man, and he just asked Wilberforce if he wanted to read through it with him. And it was in the reading through of Doddridge's work that Wilberforce, he would point to that as maybe the point of his conversion,
mm-hmm.
and where things really turned a corner for him. And so I love to share that story. I actually shared that story at our house retreat when we were talking to our students about what it means to be distinctly Christian, because I do think even in our day, it may be dying down a little bit, but there is this kind of like go out, change the world, kind of this chest beating
right.
bravado about how we need to go take the world for Christ. And what I love about that story is you live out your calling and the things that God has put in your heart that you love, that you're good at,
mm-hmm.
to be a chemist, and just live faithfully. And even if Milner, see, there's a ton of Milners out there that never influenced a Wilberforce. Mm-hmm. But that does not make their life any less significant.
Right.
We just heard about him because he's connected to Wilberforce. And you know, praise God for the Wilberforces of the world. That
right.
was his calling, and God used him powerfully, and he'll continue to use people like that. But when we talk to kids, when I think about my own life, you know, Milner encourages me,
mm-hmm.
because it's a call to just be faithful. I think I use the language with the students, the impact of fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
Just be right. faithful in the small things. And whatever God does with that, that's God's business.
Right.
We just get to enjoy the ride, so mm-hmm. to speak. And I think that's what I loved about what I know about Milner through reading Wilberforce, as this was just a guy that he seemed to really have a joy in life being a mathematician and a chemist. who enjoyed people and loved Jesus and just went about his business,
right,
winsomely interacting with people, and probably struggled just like the rest of us.
Right.
So
that's great. Well, Russ, thank you so much. Thanks for spending the time here to talk through things about how we're Christian. Thank you especially for really taking the time to dive deep into being intentional and asking the tough questions on that. So I really appreciate that. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, this is great. We'll have to do it again.
All right. Sounds good. We will.
Thanks for listening to An Examined Education. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, schedule a tour, reach out to the advancement office. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to hear what you have to say about the podcast. So be sure to check us out on your favorite social media platform. Again, that's at An Examined Education. Leave us a comment, rate and review, and we'll see you next time.